Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we got funny Kawhi Leonard stories. We got that knockout from the weekend and your voicemails on the most elaborate lies anybody has ever told you. But first. All right, so I went to Toronto over the weekend. I figured, look, man, if the NBA Finals are an hour and a half flight away, there's no reason not to go. So me and Pablo hit up the folks and was like, yo, we're going to go up there. We did a little pregame broadcast action of sorts, had a good time in Toronto. And shout out to whoever that was that I saw in the hotel. I was getting ready to check in. My man gave me a good old-fashioned hearty welcome to Canada. Yeah, you know, people always talk about how nice the Canadians are. They are, more or less. They're somewhat kind people. I was in the crowd listening to some Canadian smack talk. They was really smack talking Adam Silver because we were sitting like 3 rows behind Silver and Obama. And man, every bit of displeasure these gentlemen had toward the referees, they directed toward Adam Silver. But I have to say it was in very polite tones. I always feel like this thing about how nice and docile Canadians are is a bit overrated. And there's an easy, like, counter argument to them being so, like how nice they are. And that counter argument is hockey. Like, them dudes is out there punching each other in the face all the time and stuff like that, man. Guess what? Yeah, they are largely from Canada. That's them too. And you get them talking about the Maple Leafs, all that politeness go out the window. But anyway, yeah, so we were there. I think the closest comparison that I would have toward what I experienced kind of walking on the streets in Toronto was people who went to Indianapolis that year. They had the Super Bowl there because they had the Super Bowl in Indianapolis one year because somebody got the bright idea to start letting cold weather places have the Super Bowl just so everybody can say that they had one. But, you know, for Indianapolis, that's a big convention town. Like, they like to have, like, masses of people in town for these conventions. So this, for them, was their chance to sell themselves. And, man, it was just like a full-on audition. But it felt kind of like top-down sort of thing. Like, it was coordinated from the top. Like, hey, everybody, let's sell the rest of America on Indianapolis, and then we can sell the rest of America some more to Indianapolis. Toronto, man, there's very much so we want everybody that's here to feel comfortable, and we want to show them just how dope Toronto is. Like, there seemed to be a real investment going around there about just demonstrating to us Americans how dope Toronto is. And to be fair to them, we are a fairly ignorant, insular nation who does make a lot of conclusions about people, not just from other countries, but we have like other regions of our own country. I'm from the South. I hear all kind of craziness about us, so I know they might be thinking some of that same stuff about y'all up there in Toronto. I get it, man, but they was on display, and I got to say, as always, because I have been to Toronto before, as always, I enjoy myself. But Gabe, let me tell you what is not going on in Toronto. Summer.
Really? I mean, I feel like all the talk was about how beautiful the weather was up
there.
That's
for them people that think a high of 68 is a high.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, man. It's getting down into the, like, 50s and 40s at night. No. Summer. I mean, I guess if you don't know no better, you might think that it's summer. But no. I did not feel as though summer had truly arrived in Canada. It just had not gotten there yet. But no, cool little place. Let me tell you this, too. They, you know, they went legal in Canada. Did you know that?
Yes, I do. I was in Canada not too long ago on vacation, and
that's right.
Certainly caught the whiff that it might be legal.
Well, that's what I was going to mention, was that, like, I feel like in these places in the United States where it's gone legal, you're still not just supposed to be, like, posted up outside, like, smoking weed. Like, it's kind of like the open container law. You know what I mean? Like that's not what it is supposed to be. You're not just supposed to be just lounged around. Apparently, in Canada, any place that you can smoke a cigarette, you can also smoke a joint. So, man, they just firing up all over the place, man. They had a sign outside of Jurassic Park, and yeah, it said no smoking of anything. Nah, it kind of smelled like Cannabis Park, at least the part that I was that we was in there. No. They out there firing up with what's the word I'm looking for? Impunity. They living a life. So you imagine that. Your team made the NBA finals. That's a real big deal to everybody. And you can just smoke weed on the street. Oh, psh, they is firing up. They better watch out too. The Raptors better stay good. Cause if I've learned anything, in my travels is that if you get a bad basketball team and don't nobody be showing up, man, please, the upper deck gonna look like one of them smoking lounges in the airport in Atlanta. So they don't be firing up in there. They is firing up all over the streets of Toronto. Gabe, you remember when, they was getting on me about how diverse Toronto is and how you won't see the crowd in Toronto that you in any NBA arena. You remember that?
Yeah, how'd things look out there?
That is a lie. It looked like every other NBA arena that I've been in. I don't know. Like, the thing I found funny about that dude saying that was, I'm not sure how many other NBA arenas he's actually been to. Nah, man, I was like, there was no point that I was sitting in the crowd looking around and I didn't say to myself, yeah, I'm in Toronto. Like, it was plenty white. I mean, we were on, I want to say the 12th row. You know, so we down there where the people got the pricier tickets. So who knows? Maybe it looks a little bit different in the upper deck where you got a broader cross section of humanity. But nah, down low, man, just look like a bunch of white folks from Canada. Like, I did see the super fan, you know, my man with the turban. I did see him over there, and I did see a couple other turbans. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like there may be a tendency to overstate some of the diversity because some of the diversity comes with elaborate haberdashery. And so they stand out. Like, you notice them a little bit more. But I have been to plenty of NBA arenas for plenty of NBA events, regular season, playoffs, all-star, all of that. Nah, that looked like Canada.
Did you or did you not go simply to be able to make this point?
Man, please, I don't give a damn what they think. Like, let me tell you what I'm not about to do. Go through customs just to go conduct that little experiment. No, I went because it was an NBA finals game and I could get there and I could get tickets.
Okay. Respect.
Hey, come on now. You've been doing this with me a little bit too long. You know, I ain't got no time to be worried about it in that way, but I am here to tell you now that I have actually done it. Don't believe the hype, man. Do not believe the hype. NBA arena's got all kinds of people that are there. But what I do think is the case, with like crowds, like you're talking about like Jurassic Park and the stuff around the arena and stuff. I will say that I think a better representation of the diversity of Toronto was definitely in the streets or like around the games rather than inside the building. But like that Jurassic Park area, I don't know what they call it when the Maple Leafs are doing something, but apparently they get out there too. I saw a picture of one of them crowds and it looked, you know, gay. That looked like, I don't know. Like that straight ahead looked like Canada. So here is my theory about the crowds in Toronto, and I think this makes sense. Again, keeping in mind a very important thing that the hockey team and the basketball team are in season at the same time. It's kind of hard to divide your attention. It's kind of hard to be a diehard of both, right? What you have with the basketball team, which is probably similar to most places in the U.S., is that the fan base is going to look more quote-unquote diverse because there are going to be fewer white people by percentage in the population of the basketball fans than there are in, say, the hockey group. Does that make sense?
That's fair.
You know, so you're chopping off a significant portion of the white population, which then makes the concentration of the browner populations higher. It does not become a representation of what the city is, though, right? The diversity of the basketball fan base is not going to be representative of the diversity of the city because the diversity of the city, in part, is going to then be kind of, I don't want to say dwarfed, but it's going to be obscured by the massive white population. That's kind of what happens. Like, one thing I also thought about theoretically with a lot of what these folks was talking about with the diversity is that there are a lot of different types of people in Toronto, people from different places, people speaking different languages, but I do think it's lost in this is like, what exactly is the population of the population concentration of these people, you know? Cause no, it's not like you get to Canada and be like, damn, I can't even get to Toronto and be like, damn, I can't even tell what country I'm in. No, that doesn't happen. But hey, I was enjoying it, man. Like this, I mean, it's a really, really, really big deal for them that the NBA Finals has showed up. Like, it was really charming and endearing just generally how psyched up people were that they had these NBA Finals and they got a team that can legitimately win the damn thing. You know, it was a bummer, I imagine, for them. They lost the game. They wasn't in the streets weeping or nothing, but they've got a chance to win a championship. And Gabe, Obama showed up. And I can't tell you how excited they seem to be about that.
Yeah, man got a standing ovation.
Yo, they were so excited that he was there. And like, again, we were, this is actually pretty funny. We were three rows behind Obama, one row ahead of Obama, and maybe four seats to his right was Amar Rashad. If I'm lying, I'm flying. Amar Rashad did something that any of us would do, which is not actually be close to famous person, turn to take the selfie of yourself to get the famous person in it and then get that person's attention so that they can then face your camera.
Ooh, that is a slick move.
Yeah, but you would think Amar Rashad, Michael Jordan's ace, might be a little above that, right?
Yeah, one would think that, yeah.
Also, Obama and Jordan, I don't want to say they got beef. Jordan did some video, I can't remember what it was for, some interview, but it was with Amar Rashad, and he was talking about golf. And, you know, Jordan and Obama are two dudes who can't let nothing slide. And so Jordan said that Obama was a bad golfer. He's like, I ain't saying nothing about what kind of politician he is. I'm just saying he's a golfer. Like, that is what Michael Jordan said on this camera, because, of course, why wouldn't Michael Jordan say that? So they asked Obama about this somewhere like at like a president type event, you know, somewhere where he was there. It ain't like they got him like in a back room talking about this. He's on the microphone and he says something about Michael, and he goes, yes, I think Michael should probably be a little more focused on the Bobcats. Oh, excuse me, the Hornets.
Ooh, a little Freudian slip.
There was no Freud. He did that on purpose. He threw shade at Mike. Like, I would be curious to know how it would happen if Obama and Mike saw each other. And I'd really like to know now how it would go if they played golf, because I was talking to Wilbon. You know, Wilbon know everybody. I haven't seen the video, but Wilbon just told me that Obama comes out in the tunnel. Wilbon happened to be there. Wilbon's talking to him. And all Obama is telling him is, I can't wait to take your money. I can't wait to take your money. This ain't about taxes. Apparently now Obama plays golf every day, because Wilbon and Kornheiser were better than him at golf. And so now he plays golf every day. And so now he can't wait to play golf with Michael Wilbon so that he can take Michael Wilbon's money.
Man,
this really happened. Wilbon goes back, you know, Chicago. So like, Wilbon goes back with Michelle, you know. So like, Wilbon knows the squad in that way. And yeah, Obama hit him. Obama said he's going to take his money. Why? Because Obama can't let nothing slide. Obama be talking cash noise, cash. And I really feel like you can't talk that much. You can't talk cash like that when you're the president, because people ain't really allowed to talk cash back. It becomes a one-sided predicament. Anyway, they love him in Toronto. You think if he ran for president of Canada, he would win? No.
Certainly the sentiment was overly positive.
You got to admit, though, if you go through the history of Canadian politicians, they have not had their Barack Obama. I looked it up when people started talking all that stuff. Yeah, they haven't exactly reached that point. And they, you remember that dude that used to be the mayor that used to smoke crack? Rest in peace.
Correct.
You know, his brother is the mayor of Toronto now.
Oh boy.
It does not speak highly of this commitment to diversity that people have been telling me so much about, the other day when I was talking about Toronto. Now, man, Toronto's good living. They enjoyed themselves. But hold up, in this next segment, I'm going to have to tell you about this other thing I saw in Toronto. Go ahead and play that cool music that gets us to the next one. I'm going to tell you right now why Kawhi Leonard cannot leave Toronto. Y'all, you wasn't ready for that, was you, Gay?
I certainly wasn't ready for you to campaign today.
I'm not even so much campaigning. I'm just telling you what I saw, and I think there's something to it. You know, so Kawhi Leonard doesn't really have a nickname. They tried to come up with this claw thing because he got the big old hands. We're going to talk a little more about the claw in a second. But New Balance, man, shout out to whoever at New Balance came up with this idea, because I guarantee you, your boss loves the fact that you came up with something so smart yet also so inexpensive. They had people on the streets, downtown, around the arena with these stacks. You come from a distance, it looked like these stacks of red papers, what it looks like, except they kind of long, they just handed them out to people. I'm like, what is going on here? You remember the Burger King crowns? I think they still make them, but I'm not sure. You know the Burger King crown, right? New Balance had people in the streets handing out their version of the Burger King crown, except it said King of the North. Do you watch that show? It's called Game of Thrones.
I do watch that show.
Okay. I've never watched an episode of Game of Thrones in my life, but I understand that the King of the North is like a Game of Thrones reference.
It is.
Okay. It's a big deal. It's all over the place. Millions of people watch it. Got to say, while I find these kinds of derivative nicknames to typically be kind of lame, I feel like King of the North is kind of dope. It is a far superior nickname to Claw. And the Burger King crown idea was a great idea. Therefore, he can't leave Toronto, because how could you leave such a good nickname? Only Kevin Durant would leave a great nickname on the table.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's any sort of copyright infringement with HBO there saying King of the North and putting it on branded.
I'm assuming there is not.
Well, so does that copyright infringement extend outside of the U.S.?
I don't know, but I would assume there is not. I'm sure this went. I guarantee that you were that somebody at New Balance had the same question you did.
I do think that these like little branding stunts are very cool.
Yeah,
when they do them right.
But I ain't talking about no stunt. I'm talking about King of the North. Like, you can ride that out forever. That is, especially if they win the championship, that is a great nickname. Even if you don't win the championship. In fact, I feel like the Raptors should have thought about this sooner and come up with something where every year the team MVP is the King of the North. Like, America can't compete with that. We not the North. Y'all the North. This is what y'all say. Anyway, they were hanging out. Like, this is New Balance's time to shine. And I got to say, his New Balances he been wearing, not so bad. I mean, I don't think I'm going to wear them, but not so bad. Like, he's doing okay with it. Now, when he was with Nike, though, is his Claw thing. And apparently Nike owns the Claw name, like the nickname Claw, and they own the Claw logo. And so Kawhi is trying to get back the Claw. The Clippers also have been reported to be trying to acquire it for him. Like, is that part of their package, is to try to get him? But we found out how they came up with the Claw. Gabe, you want to tell the people who came up with the Claw logo?
Kawhi did.
That's right. Kawhi is a business genius.
Man drew his own hand.
That's what he did.
Yeah, they said the drawing that Leonard authored was an extension and continuation of drawings that he had been creating since early in his college career. Back then when he visualized the way his career was going to play out. And he's like, I'm going to have my own brand and my own logo, and it's going to be the Claw.
So basically what they're telling us is Kawhi spent his time in class in college tracing his hand.
Sounds about right.
Is that what it sounds like to you? Because that's what it sounds like to me. Kawhi just passing time drawing his old head. I give him credit for this. If they had a logo meeting, you think there's maybe somebody at Nike who was just lazy? But they're like, oh man, like, what am I supposed to come up with for this dude? And he's like, what if I just put my hand on the table and I just draw a line around it and look at it. It's like a K and an L.
I would like to envision a scenario where they're like, oh man, Kawhi, we're really stumped. Do you have any ideas? And he's like, well, actually, and pulls out of his backpack a binder just full of Claw hand drawings. They're like, you know what? That's a really good idea. Let's roll with that.
Right. There's some lazy dude at Nike who doesn't even want this account in the first place. He's still mad that they let Steph Curry walk, right? And then he's like, yeah, that's great. That's fine. Yeah, we'll do it. That's it. And then we'll make it part of the story. Kawhi designed this himself.
They're drawing up all the paperwork so that they own it.
Yes. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. Let me tell you this. I'll never forget this, man. I once worked at a company. Oh, I mean, I can put names in this. This isn't a big deal. I used to do this radio show called The Morning Jones, right? Now, I did not come up with the name The Morning Jones. My boss came up with the name. But the company was going out of business. And I remember this. This is about 2 weeks before I get this random email. Hey, Bobani, we were just wondering, did you ever file any trademark, copyright, paperwork on the name of The Morning Jones? I mean, obviously I didn't. It wasn't mine. Like, I wasn't going to do that. But that was definitely the loose end that they were tied up. They were like, hey, let's make sure we still own this, right? Nike was like, yeah, Claw's ours. Thanks. Appreciate it. I'm looking at Kawhi, like, leave that on the table. You're the king of the North now. You just got to stay in the North. And by the way, I'm starting to think he will.
I feel like I've seen conflicting reports. So you're more aligned with the True Hoop reporting then.
Well, what is Henry saying?
Well, so True Hoop is reporting that Kawhi is more than likely to return to the Raptors on a short-term deal.
That's what I'm thinking is going to happen, and I've heard some similar things.
Well, I mean, if you go to the finals, you know, and you re-sign and kind of do like a LeBron thing where you do a 1+1, why not?
Well, the big variable here is Kawhi has been in the league 8 years. It's a different max you can sign when you've been in for 10.
Okay.
Like that's the thought. But I mean, he's depending on how much the basketball stuff matters to him. Cause keep in mind, he's already got a ring. He's already got a finals MVP. Depending on how much the basketball stuff matters to him, is there a better executive in the league than Masai Ujiri? I think there's a fair argument to be made that he's the best executive in the league, if for no other reason than the fact that he made the trade to get Kawhi Leonard in the first place. Like, it was a bold move. It was a smart move. But, I mean, that showed a level of heart that you just don't see in very many places. The Knicks would love to hire him just to make sure that he never does a trade with them.
Yeah, I mean, if you examine all of the different deals that he's done, I'd say maybe the counter to Masai is like Bob Myers. But a lot of the stuff was in place before Bob got there. Like
yes.
They drafted Curry. I want to say that Klay Thompson had already been drafted as well, whereas everything in Toronto is pretty much built by Masai. I mean, all the different little pieces, you know, getting Ibaka for Terrence Ross.
Yeah.
Getting Marc Gasol and having to swap out Jonas Valanciunas and a couple other fillers. Getting Kawhi. Drafting Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
Drafting OG Anunoby. All these are Masai's handiwork.
And setting this team up to where if it did not work this year and Kawhi left, they were ready to start the rebuild.
Yeah. Knowing when to cut bait, right?
Yeah. Like no, he's that guy. And so if the basketball stuff matters, they gave Kawhi all that rest, all that stuff to try to take care of his body. Like they did all those things. I would be worried though that Kawhi is breaking down and this is after all the rest they gave him. Now they've worn him out in the playoffs, but after all that rest, his body still doesn't seem to be right. And it seems to be in the regions of things that were causing him problems that got him out of San Antonio. But I think there's a good chance that he winds up staying, on a short term deal in Toronto. And then he can be the king of the North for as long as there is. By the way, we haven't actually talked that much about the finals here, but I'll tell you this. Klay Thompson's hurt. Looney's out of there. I don't think Kevin Durant is going to play again in this series.
Really? You don't think he's going to play again at all?
No, I don't. I don't feel like they're not comporting this like he's a guy who's going to come back. Like this, he'll come back midway through the series. I think the chances now are more likely than ever, but that's because they need him so badly. I mean, they're just dropping like flies. Like Iguodala's a little banged up. If the Warriors win this, and they win it on the back of Steph Curry, and to a lesser extent, Draymond Green. We got to get that man his flowers. Like, we have to give him everything for this. This would be some true heart of a champion type stuff. Got to give it to Kerr. Like, anybody who would be around if they still won this. Because, yeah, the gap between the Warriors and the rest of the league, I get people saying that it was fairly wide. But the gap between this roster right now and the rest of the league is not wide. No. Like, the special thing about this roster right now, assuming Klay Thompson doesn't play in game three, he might, but let's just say he's not. That's just Steph Curry and a bunch of dudes. That's Steph Curry and a bunch of dudes who can't really shoot. If they win this, give them all the credit in the world. Like this would be, if we don't give the Warriors a lot of gritty points. That's just not how we view them. That's not how we deal with them. We don't give them a lot of gritty points. This would be as gritty as any win that you could imagine. The thing is, part of why we don't think of them as a gritty team is we don't think of them as a team that gets like ugly baskets because that's not how they do it. If they don't have Klay, like they're going to need to figure out how to get some ugly baskets. And I don't know if they have anybody who can except for maybe other than Boogie Cousins, who was surprisingly good in game two. But are you betting on another good Boogie Cousins game?
No.
I tell you this, though. It's going to have to be like a 3-1 series in the second half and the Raptors up 15 before I just come out here and say they're going to win. Like they have not created a scenario at all where I would feel comfortable saying that I'm just not. That's the respect I got for the Warriors is I'm not saying they're going to win, but I'm damn sure not saying they're going to lose. Absolutely not. All right, before we go, the Athletic. They did the oral history of Klay Thompson's time in San Diego State. And I didn't realize this.
Gabe, Kawhi Leonard's time in San Diego
State. Who did I say?
You said Klay Thompson.
All right, Kawhi Leonard, whatever. Fine. I mean, I bet Klay Thompson's been to San Diego State before.
I'm sure he has. He went to Washington State, though, interestingly enough.
Yes, he did. Only Pac-12 school to offer him. And I found out Kawhi didn't get offers from Pac-12 schools, and that seems strange. You know why he didn't? Try to call him and talk on the phone, and he ain't want to talk.
I thought that was the funniest part of the whole story.
He kept trying to call him, and he didn't want to talk. And so they're like, I guess he doesn't want to come here. So San Diego State would send somebody up to the gym once a week, and all he'd ever want to do is shoot. They said he came down for his official visit at San Diego State. All he wanted to do was go shoot. They said once he gets to San Diego State, he had the biggest problem with, like, the concept of help side defense. And he couldn't understand what help side defense was because he's like, I don't see why we need to do this. Why can't they just be like me and not let their man get past them?
The way I was thinking about it yesterday was like, you know, that you got that genius math teacher who's just making everybody feel really stupid, who needs things explained to them a few times. And it's exactly like that. But Kawhi with on-ball defense.
Yeah, but I just found it hilarious that he's just like, no, just don't let him go past you. That's it. Like, at least the guy with, like, the high-level math guy is like, oh, fine. And then he, like, does a whole bunch of stuff. And then he's like, he can't understand why you can't do, like, all these steps. Kawhi is not even thinking it out that deep. He's just like, yo, it's simple. Don't let him do it.
It's like, Kawhi, but I have physical limitations that are not allowing me to keep up with this person. Just don't do it.
Yeah, just don't do it. Whatever it takes. I mean, I just, like, I would have no explanation for that person. That's kind of like when Allen Iverson says, and I quote, and this is the best part of the practice press conference, how the hell am I supposed to help my teammates get better by practicing? And if you have to ask me that, there's nothing I can tell you that's going to make sense. Right? Like, and what did it take for Kawhi to be like, oh, okay, so sometimes other guys get beat? Like, was there some moment, or is he just really out here just, like, just doing what coach tells me when he plays upside defense?
Maybe when he got to the league and realized that there were people who were high-level NBA players who didn't have the same level of defensive skill that he had, maybe he came to that realization.
Yeah, I guess. Did you see another thing, too? Like, the little things he says. Like, he doesn't really talk trash, but he talks. but he talks in, like, one-word phrases, like three-word phrases. So, like, yeah, he said, all you'll say is if he scores, bucket. Bucket. And he says if he's playing defense and some dude tries to get by him, he was like, nope. 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 And he loved rebounding. Because I do remember this. He was like a crazy rebounder at San Diego State. I want to say he led the conference in rebounding as a freshman and a sophomore when he was at San Diego State. And he said he would go get the board. He'd be like, board man get paid. While never really talking about anything else, ever.
Very creative.
It's a different sort of dude, man. This is a different sort of dude. They keep pulling him out there to do them post-game interviews. Knowing he ain't got a damn thing to say. And I have to say, I enjoy listening to him not have anything to say.
Or just be brutally honest about something. Like, oh you know, Kawhi, how does it feel to beat the Warriors? Well, I haven't done it yet.
Yes. Yeah, he takes everything to, like, childlike levels. Everything is taken, like, he really answers questions like a child does. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. I mean, it's like those sorts of things where you're like, yeah, well, I guess you got a point there. Yeah, like, we haven't done it yet. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you're right. You know, what would it mean for this team to win the championship?
I don't really know. We just have to win the championship first.
Got it, Kawhi. Right? You can't even be mad at him. Like, I don't know how you frame a question. What would you have to do to get Kawhi to give you, like, a question with a real answer?
One would hope that kind of, like, looking him in the eye and be like, come on. Yeah, you know, give me a little something here. One would think that they would do it, but the stare that you would get back would be so empty.
I bet there's some topic that you could get him, like, really excited about. Like, what if he was really into Star Wars?
You know what? That does seem like something that he would be into. Like, he would have not like a closeted interest, but something that he would keep from everyone else, but he would be super, super interested in it.
The story did say that the two things that he watched all the time were Jordan highlights and Martin. Can you imagine Kawhi with that goofy laugh watching Martin? Something tells me he goes to a laughing place that we wouldn't be able to be like, oh, oh, oh. You're like, what?
I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at.
What up, Kawhi? Tommy said GTD. You know, like, it would be some different stuff. Can't get enough. Kawhi let it. I've officially run out of things to say. We'll be back in a minute to talk about Anthony Joshua getting knocked out. But first, finding a new job is a lot of work. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Now ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you'll like and puts your profile in front of employers who may be looking for someone like you. If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know, so if you're interested in the job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app. And based on a third-party survey, 7 out of 10 people who found a new job on ZipRecruiter increased their salaries. Now, these were the results of a 2017 survey of over 500 ZipRecruiter users who got hired for a job they found on ZipRecruiter. My listeners should download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Don't wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. Hey, Gabe, you watched that fight?
I didn't, but I caught the highlights.
Yo, man, that's the heavyweight champion of the world. A dude named Andy, who looks like he has not worked out in 7 years.
And a dude who had a Snickers bar as his Twitter header without having a sponsorship from Snickers.
That is an important distinction. Without having a sponsorship.
Brand ambassador for Snickers, just because he loves Snickers so much, not because he's getting any sort of payment from Snickers.
Have you ever done any boxing?
I have not, no.
Okay, I have not either. But when I was 21, I was in Las Vegas. And in like the atrium of Caesar's Palace, they had, it's kind of like Wii boxing, right? But it's like a video game where you put the paddles in your hand and you actually did the boxing stuff. I have never been more exhausted in my life than after one round of that game. The second fight, by the way, they had me against a character who was ultimately Dennis Rodman, and Dennis Rodman kicked my ass. But it's so physically taxing what it takes to box. And I'm telling you this from doing it on like a little video game where you ain't got to worry about nobody punching you in the face. You have to be in such incredible physical condition to be a boxer. Gabe, how in the world is that dude Andy boxing and looking like that at the same time?
I've always been under the impression that boxers have this unreal amount of cardio and just not a ounce of fat on their body when you look at somebody like Floyd or what have you.
He's flabbier than George Foreman was when George Foreman was fighting in his 40s.
Is that something that's consistent with the heavyweight division? I mean, there's that
really.
Boxer Butterbean, you know,
yeah, but
like
he wasn't
big boy.
But he wasn't the champ.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's going to be some fat dudes out here in heavyweight boxing, but not the champ. This dude is the champ, and like he took Anthony Joshua out. I don't really know too much about how things work in England, which is where he is from, but I know in the United States, boy, good luck going back to the neighborhood explaining this one. At some places where you go back and try to tell the homies that this fat Mexican dude beat you up, they ain't really trying to hear your explanations. I don't know if England worked that way. Hey, man, maybe that's what life happens to be. Tell me this. Have you ever seen a Mexican heavyweight boxer before?
No, I haven't.
Like, I feel like Canelo Alvarez is, like, the biggest Mexican boxer I can think of off the top of my head. Like, at least definitely no bigger than light heavyweight. I had never seen this. Like, this was cognitively dissonant in so many ways. And the people who were at the fight told me it was electric in there. Like, I mean, it was cracking in there. And every time somebody says boxing is dead, there's always going to be people who are interested in boxing. Right? Like, the core boxing fan is always going to be there. But we didn't know, like, we don't really know nothing about Anthony Joshua. Like, we're aware of him, but we don't care about him. And we knew nothing about this Andy Ruiz guy. And people were captivated by the fact that he won it. Like, it ain't never going to be dead. Like, I don't know what's going to have to happen in baseball to make people pay attention. Like, if you tell me this, if somebody hits 6 home runs in a baseball game, you think anybody would care? Like, outside of baseball?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it would be enough for a highlight on SportsCenter, but that's about it. It's not like you'd get a majority of people on Twitter talking about it in one night.
All it took was a fat dude to win the heavyweight championship, and all of a sudden America was excited. Like, boxing has it in him in that way. You know, people were talking about, well, what we was going to get was like Anthony Joshua against Deontay Wilder. They were both undefeated. Everybody's going to be excited about that. Nah, what we going to get is Andy and Anthony Joshua are going to fight again. And if my recollection of how boxing tends to work is any indication, Anthony Joshua's then going to go out there and pummel old Andy like Buster Douglas got rocked by Holyfield, or like Haseem Rahman in that rematch against Lennox Lewis. You know how that goes. He gonna get rocked, and then we're going to actually pay attention to the Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua fight in a way that we had not before. And then Deontay Wilder might break that guy's face. If your weakness is your chin, I don't want to fight that dude. Under no circumstances. Ever tell you about the time I went and covered a heavyweight boxing camp?
You have not.
I went up to this little town called California, Pennsylvania. This dude named Calvin Brock, the boxing banker, because this dude used to work at the bank, but he had been boxing. His dad taught him to box using instructional tapes, you know, and all this stuff. And he just really wanted to be a boxer. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So I went up there and I was just like, yo, like, why are you out here getting hit in the face? And he didn't really give much talk. He was undefeated at the time. He didn't want to think about getting hit in the face. I talked to his trainer. His trainer was like, yo, ask him, like, what's it feel like to get hit in the face by a heavyweight? That's what I wanted to know. That's the question I wanted to get to. And he dude told me, I can't remember exactly which. I can't remember if he said it felt like getting hit, with a 25-pound dumbbell from a 20-story window, or a 20-pound dumbbell from a 25-story window. But I feel like the particulars don't matter that much if it's in that range.
Yeah, either one's going to break my face.
Yeah, that's what he said, right? Like, and the thing he said as a reminder, he was like, when Mike Tyson hit Mitch Green in the street and balled his eye up like a softball, he's like, that was just a jab. So anyway, yeah, I went up and I talked to that dude about that. And that dude went and fought Klitschko. Klitschko knocked him out. Then the dude had another fight, detached retina, can't fight no more. He out here back banking. Gabe, I would have just stuck to the banking myself.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from entertainment.
My name is Emily Yar, and I'm an entertainment reporter for the Washington Post. So the story I just wrote was about Jeopardy phenomenon and professional sports gambler James Holzhauer, who won an unbelievable $2.4 million over 32 games. On Monday, he had a really good chance to beat Ken Jennings' record from 2004, which was about $2.5 million over 74 games. However, over the weekend, footage leaked online and circulated on social media that showed James losing. And that proved to be true. On Monday, he lost his 33rd game to a contestant named Emma Botcher, who is a Chicago librarian, and she beat him in the final Jeopardy round by about $22,000. So James' streak is over, and he did not beat Ken Jennings. I actually spoke to Ken about this, and he said, honestly, I feel a little bit of the same letdown I did when I lost in 2004. I was enjoying the streak maybe more than anybody. I really wanted to see what this guy could do. So Ken also said he thinks that this might actually change how contestants approach Jeopardy in the future, because part of the reason that James did so well was he had this really intense strategy. He would jump all over the board searching for daily doubles and start with the highest clue amounts. Plus, he's a gambler, so he was totally fine wagering massive amounts of money on Final Jeopardy, even if that meant he could potentially walk away with nothing. So it's possible that people in the future will also try to kind of copy this very aggressive gameplay. But overall, it was just a really exciting time for Jeopardy, which has been around for 35 seasons, but it kind of tends to get overlooked. It's just such a constant in people's lives. And as Ken Jennings said, this whole thing with James reminded us how much Jeopardy means to us and how much we love it. I think we take Jeopardy for granted, and it's nice when something like this comes along.
So the big thing is he wasn't like going all over the board. He was specifically going and racking up all the like big money clues as he could so that his total would be as high as it could be when he got to the daily double. Like that was what he was doing strategically, is that I want to maximize what happens when I get the daily double. In single Jeopardy, first clue, daily double. So he wasn't able to do the multiplying thing he had been doing. The first one he pulled was the daily double. In double Jeopardy, the librarian, she got both of the daily doubles. So he never had the chance to play it into that big score. Like all the clues are going off the board, but he never had a chance to hit that big multiplier. So then he was behind when he went into Final Jeopardy. And he got it right, but everybody got it right. Final Jeopardy been kind of easy lately. But that was what it was. He just never had a chance to hit the multiplier, and she had the chance to hit that daily double twice in Double Jeopardy. That was it. That was it. Like I said, everybody's like, oh man, he's got this wild, this crazy strategy that nobody else has come up with. To a degree, yes, but in the end, a big part of it was he held the domino. right? He kept holding the domino, and so he was the one that was getting the daily doubles. And all it took for him to lose was to not get the daily doubles.
What are your thoughts now this run has ended for James?
That's wild and impressive, man. Dude got himself a couple $1 million. Good for him. And he handled it well. Like, when he lost, he went over there and said congratulations. I would have wanted to stomp off myself. And this is the whack part, man. His little girl brought Alex Trebek a get well card. And then he lost. You know what that means?
What does that mean?
That little girl, bad luck. You got to keep the eye of the tiger. You can't be out here. That's what happens. You get weak. You got to keep the eye of the tiger.
Do you agree with Emily that the game has changed for future?
Kinda. Like, I think people will alter their strategies, but the reason this worked was not so much the strategy as much as he was so good.
Mm. I wonder what the next move is now for James. Now he's got this newfound notoriety.
Go back. He's trying to get a job with a pro team. That's what he wants.
Well, we will monitor James's movement.
There we go.
Our next story comes from agriculture.
This is Andrew Jacobs from the New York Times, and I write about global health. Florida's orange and grapefruit groves have been absolutely devastated by a bacterial infection from China called citrus greening, and it's wiped out thousands of acres of trees and caused widespread job losses since it first touched down here in 2005. With no cure in sight, growers have been turning to a novel pesticide, antibiotics. The same antibiotics used to treat syphilis, tuberculosis, urinary tract infections, and a number of other illnesses in humans. The spraying, which was recently approved by the EPA, has helped experts worried. They fear it could encourage antibiotic resistance, a huge and growing problem for the world. Thanks to the overuse of antibiotics, especially in livestock, bacteria have learned how to evade the drugs, and they're becoming increasingly ineffective at fighting many deadly infections. According to CDC, if nothing is done to slow resistance, and if drug companies don't invest in new drugs, 10 million people around the world could die by 2050, killing more people each year than cancer. Here's the thing. The spraying of antibiotics on citrus could increase dramatically if the disease reaches California's vast orange groves, something that's expected to happen in the coming year or two. It's not even clear the drugs work. But Florida's growers are desperate, and they feel like it's worth giving it a try. The hope is they can buy a little time until a real cure is found.
So they done messed up oranges, too. Yo, by the way, can y'all please take all of y'all's antibiotics? Can I just go ahead and just put that out there? Could y'all please take all of y'all antibiotics? Because bad things happen when y'all don't take all of y'all's antibiotics. Have you heard, Gabe? The antibiotics ain't got nothing for the clap no more.
Really?
Yeah. Why? Because people wasn't taking all their antibiotics. And I don't know nothing firsthand about having that. But I would think if there was anything that would make you take all your medicine, wouldn't it be that? Wouldn't you want to make sure that he didn't have no flare back up with that one? Take your antibiotics.
One thing that I thought was particularly deplorable is, like, you're already getting antibiotics and milk from time to time, depending on what type of milk you're buying. But now it's going to be in your oranges, and there's not really much that you can do about it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Y'all ain't taking your antibiotics when you're supposed to take your antibiotics, and now they're trying to give us antibiotics when we shouldn't want them.
And these bacteria out here are getting smart.
We're hustling backwards in every way. Take your antibiotics. Don't take theirs, but take yours. Yeah.
This last story comes from space.
This is Jeff Brumfield. I'm a correspondent for NPR Science Desk. Basically, here's the deal. Elon Musk, the internet billionaire who's now running companies like SpaceX and Tesla, may forever change our view of the night sky. And here's how it's going to happen. Musk has this company called Starlink, and the idea is a network of satellites that can provide internet access from anywhere on Earth. They launched their first 60 satellites back in May, and basically what people found when they looked up in the sky is they could see this train of satellites going by. It was like a little line of bright, shiny little things. Now, astronomers kind of freaked out because Musk is planning on launching 12,000 or so of these satellites, and if they all are as bright as these first 60, it's going to be a big problem because there's only about 12,000 stars visible in the night sky on any given night, to the naked eye, that is. Now, SpaceX says they expect these satellites will grow dimmer. They're trying to solve the problem, but astronomers are really worried that our night sky may look very different in just a couple of years.
So how's he going to mess this up? Right? Do you trust Elon Musk with this?
I don't. One thing that I thought was interesting about the piece was there was an astronomer at Caltech that said space is a little bit like the Wild West. We're still trying to figure out who owns it and who gets to make the rules.
That's such a crazy, like, statement on, like, capitalism and everything. But there's also something to it. Like, as much as a lot of people laugh when Trump came up with that Space Force, right, because it does sound to be, like, ridiculous. But, yo, man, they're going to be scrapping it out there in space. It ain't going to be long. Like the way the boys leave high school and go to Afghanistan, it ain't going to be long before they're like, yeah, we're going to Mars. M-A-R-S. And we're going to win.
Elon Musk out there going to be able to do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, but it can't be. That's the thing. Like, you got to stop him. Like, this, you got to put this in more capable hands.
Yeah. The hope is, as this guy said, that as a planet, we need like a global governance level to have this kind of discussion about how we manage the, you know, space and our orbit and the night sky as like a resource.
We're doomed.
I mean, just historically, people use stars as navigation.
Yeah.
And now you're going to be looking at, you know, our man Elon Musk filling out his own constellation out there.
Yeah, we're doomed.
Now, the next level of that is making, like, smiley faces and different sorts of designs. What if he does a satellite constellation that's, like, the Tesla logo? That's next level.
We're doomed.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Coming off of the Rob Pelinka liar story that Baxter Holmes wrote and a bunch of other reports about Pelinka being a liar, we thought it would be a good idea to put out to the listeners what is the most elaborate lie or string of lies that you have heard. We got some good responses. Our first one is from Jasmine in Tallahassee.
Hey, Bo, it's Jasmine from Tallahassee. I got a story about the craziest lie I ever heard. When I was younger, I had a stepbrother named Jacob. He's like 10 at the time, wore glasses, always lost his glasses. So his dad got him some glasses, you know, he goes to school. You know, he's doing good for about a week. I go to pick him up from the bus stop, and he gets off the bus. I say, where are your glasses? He said, I lost them. Cool, you know, I ain't gonna snitch. We go home, it's time for dinner, we go sit at the table. His dad look at him and go, where are your glasses at, son? And I swear to God, Bo, he looked his daddy dead in the face and said, I lost them at school. He said, how did you lose the glasses? He said, I was going through the lunch line and they fell in a bowl of ketchup. And my mama about choked on her sweet tea to the point where I had picked up the phone getting ready to call somebody. 911 or something. And straight face, he goes, I was just going through the lunch line and they fell in a bowl of ketchup. Mama, dad said, son, they got ketchup packets at school. Where was this bag of ketchup? That's just what happened. And I swear to God, though, this happened almost 8 years ago. And to this day, he swears up and down that his glasses fell in a bowl of ketchup. But see, where daddy got them, he went and got them thick old bifocal frames. His glasses got an inch thick. He never lost them again. Peace.
Yo, here's the thing, though. So they fell in the ketchup. Forget about the fact that this ketchup packet. What did they do? Disintegrate?
Yeah.
Like, were you unable to find them after that?
You just couldn't take them out and rinse them off? You just left them there?
Yeah. Like, was this such a big old thing of ketchup that it sank to the bottom and you couldn't reach in?
That was disgusting.
Yeah, that would be gross.
All right, the next one. This guy didn't leave his name, but I thought it was a pretty funny story.
Hey, Bomani, big fan. I was just calling about your question about the most elaborate lie someone's ever tried to get past me. When I was in my early 20s, me and my friends, we were in a band, right? And one of my friends, well, he's not my friend anymore, but at the time, this lazy guy kept wanting to get out of practice, so he actually lied and said he had skin cancer and made up this whole thing about, like, having treatment and, like, he even, like, invented this treatment place. Now, mind you, this is, like, 2004. This is before you can Google anything you want, before you can, there's no smartphones, so you can't just look into anything and see if it exists or not, and he's talking about this intensive treatment he's having, and that's why he keeps missing these practices and blah, 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 right? You know, he's lamenting about how he can't even barely go outside anymore because, you know, this particular type of cancer was aggressive. And, you know, we believed it in everything. Like I said, a lot of this was hard to double-check or fact-check, right? And then the whole thing unraveled, like, a few weeks later, you know, probably about a month or so after this all started. We catch this damn guy at a pool party. Outside, in the sun, shirtless, you know, getting baked. like, oh yeah, skin cancer, huh? Like, when he saw that we were there at the party, he actually like got up and like ran into the house, like as if we weren't gonna notice that.
Oh wow. I guess you guys know about the best lie I ever told.
What's the best lie you've ever told?
I didn't tell you about, I haven't done that on this podcast, about the time that I was out with my homeboy and we ran up on this girl who we had told that I was out of town and then I ran away. I didn't tell you about that?
No, you haven't.
Yeah, so my homeboy, and people who followed me for a while have heard this story before, but crowd loves it. So this girl in high school, I was like 16, and she was kind of feeling me, but I wasn't really feeling her. But she was making like a real aggressive play. And so I was at my homeboy's house one day, and he's the one I met her through. And so she called him, and but he went and took a call, and then he comes back out. He's like, yo, that was old girl. He's asking if you in town. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I told her you went to the Bayou Classic. I'm like, cool, perfect. A couple of days later, man, me and him at the mall, I look up, and there she is. And I look at him, and I'm like, yo, turn around. He didn't hear it fast enough. I broke. Right. I didn't know what to do. I just broke. I ran away. I didn't know where to go. I just got somewhere where I could hide. And I just kind of started walking around the mall. And I think I probably killed time for like an hour. And then finally I saw her and I was like, fine, man, I just got to own this. And as I'm walking up, my homeboy goes,
hey, yo, Patrice.
And I instantly knew what that meant. So I got up and I was like, what's going on? And my boy was like, hey, this is Bo's twin brother, Patrice.
Ooh, there was another twin story that was in there where someone had said that his man was always telling him about this girlfriend that he was dating and he only showed him the Instagram photo. But then one time they ran into the lady in the Instagram photo and she didn't know who he was. And he's like, oh, I thought he said he was your girlfriend. Oh, that was her twin sister.
Yeah, no, dog. I thought I was the twin. I carried that out, too, for years. I had her believing I had a twin. Had to be done.
That's the most convenient. This last one is from Cameron in Cleveland.
Yo, Bomani, this is Cameron from Cleveland. You talking about elaborate lies. And my guy's not just one single lie. It's been a continuous storm of lies. I'd have known this guy probably since I was 8 years old. And then, once I graduated high school, he would come back. He was a couple years older than me. He would always tell me these different stories about what he's doing now. First, it started off that he went to a JUCO for baseball, and then he was getting drafted to the MLB. Then after he was getting drafted to the MLB, my man decided that he was, gonna play for the U.S. national team. I thought that was weird because I never saw his name on the roster, but okay, I can let that one go. Then after that, he went to the military, and while he was in the military, he started flying Blackhawks, and he was flying Blackhawks for a while, and after he was flying Blackhawks, he decided that he wanted to fly jets. And then my man started flying jets. And then after he decided he was done flying jets, my man decided he wanted to go back to school and get his bachelor's in political science, and then he supposedly became a mayor of some small town in New York I had never heard of. And then after that, he decided that he wanted to try out for baseball again and get back on the U.S. national team. And then after that, my man decided he wanted to work for the Coast Guard. And by the time he had did all of this, he was maybe 28, 29 years old. I don't know about you, but I ain't never heard of no brother that can do all that stuff before he 30 years old. Oh, yeah, and I can't forget that after he got drafted into the MLB, he went back and played for, I want to say, Syracuse in baseball. And, yeah, it was just a continuous wild bit of stories, and my man has always been lying about it. And I just never confronted him on it just because I just wanted to see how outrageous and outlandish he can get. Peace, man. Appreciate you.
Yeah, I got a couple partners who be lying and you just don't feel like confronting them all, but they would tell you some amazing whoppers. I heard one whopper of a lie that is an amazing and plausible story about how a child was conceived. And that story was told by the same person who I went to go check about. Me and my homeboy went to go check this other homeboy out at his apartment, and this chick came out, and he was like, yo, it's my roommate. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, no biggie. And then as we left, my other partner was like, yo, that's a one-bedroom apartment. Roommate.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But there's nothing like the guy that's just always got a lie. Got another partner. Oh, man, this is an amazing lie. We was trying to go to Carolina Duke 05 at Cameron. We wanted to go. My man said he had a hookup on the tickets. We were like, cool. We were like, but yo, if you don't got it, let us know because we'll come up with something else. He's like, nah, I got you on the tickets. And then we kept getting closer. We're like, yo, what's up on the tickets? He's like,
Oh, man, I have to go check. What you mean you got to check? Right? Let me get closer. Well, I got a ticket for me. Okay. Then it gets closer. Well, my uncle, he work as a security guard, and he going to let me in the back door. I'm like, can you let us in the back door? I don't think I can do that. So then the game come, he at my house watching it. And I look at him, I'm like, I thought you were supposed to be at the game. I gave the tickets to my parents for their anniversary.
Convenient.
Yeah. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Also, thanks to our contributors. For if you haven't heard, thanks to Emily Yar of The Washington Post. Check out her story on the Jeopardy sideboard getting tossed up out of there. Also, thank you to Andrew Jacobs of The New York Times. Check out his story about the antibiotics in the citrus fruit that could mess up a whole lot of stuff. And thanks to Jeff Brumfield of NPR. Check out his story on space and the overcrowding that is coming there. Also, the Right Time Book Club, it's coming upon us. End of June, we'll start getting that going, but get the book now. Jim Brown, The Fierce Life of an American Hero by Mike Freeman. Give that a look. Be sure to check out the Mina Kimes show this week. She does a mega mailbag with Mike Golick Jr. Remember to subscribe to The Right Time. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear. More driven.